Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on. And welcome to another episode of 3 Yards Per Carry. I have my friend here, Simon. And I do not have Chris, because studying something, something or the other.
Do you know, I heard a rumor. I don't know if it's true, and I'll have to confirm it next week, but I heard there were 2 tickets for Huey Lewis in the news that he just couldn't miss out on.
oddly enough, he said that whatever he's studying for, which seems to be pretty important to miss a podcast, is causing him to not use 2 tickets for Daryl Hall and John Oates this Friday.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I was joking about Huey Lewis in the news, but...
Well, first of all, I know for a fact that one of them is alive because one of them has a TV show on Travel Channel, I believe.
Right.
But John Oates is also alive? Now, that's...
I mean, I wouldn't know him if I fell over in the street.
But we have a treat for our listeners. In the
special guest time.
Yes. On the second half of the show, we will have a special guest host. You know him better as the guy you clamored for to be the starting quarterback because he was a backup quarterback. A good one, by the way. Sage Rosenfels.
At this point, you killed it. At this point, we could have dragged out the tension, the excitement. Who was it that we were calling for? Doug Peterson, Matt Moore.
Yeah, right?
Kerwin Bell.
Yeah, but he will be with us in the second half, and we will talk about the national perception. He does some work for Locked On with the Vikings. We could get into, you know, quarterback movement this offseason. Obviously, we could ask him about Kirk Cousins. I'm a big fan. Are you a big fan of Kirk Cousins?
To a greater or lesser degree, I am. I don't think he's an upper echelon NFL quarterback, but I think he's probably an upgrade in Minnesota. I mean, you know, as well as Case Keenum played last year, I think Denver probably paid a lot of money for a guy who's probably going to fall off the face of the earth next season.
Yeah.
You know, I like Case, and he seems a really nice guy. And the all or nothing that Amazon did with the Cardinals last year, he came across as a really, really good guy. And you kind of pull for guys like that. But realistically, I don't think he's got the same season in him again. So, you know, is Cousins the guy to take the Vikings to the promised land? Potentially. Potentially he's good enough to do that. And, you know, they get Dalvin back, and that defense is, you know, is fantastic. So,
and they have underrated, you know, skill players if you look at them across the board.
And it's not just Stephon Diggs as well. There's, you know, Adam Thielen is a superb player. And,
yes,
you know, they've got talent there. They've absolutely got talent there.
And everybody forgets Dalvin Cook was leading the league in rushing when he got hurt last year.
That's because he's a stud.
Yes, that's a guy that we both liked, and we expect him to be better than Leonard Fournette going forward, because Leonard Fournette showed some warts last year. You know, all those complaints that people had about him, you know, finding injuries, they started surfacing last year.
I think they'll miss Jerick McKinnon, who's gone to the 49ers.
He's
that kind of change of pace player, but no, they've got a good team and a really good coaching staff, and, you know, Xavier Rhodes, one of the top sort of 3 corners in the NFL defensively. Eric Kendricks, one of the kind of most underrated players in the league in terms of middle linebacker. And Barr is still there, and Harrison Smith is still the stud. And, you know, there's some talent there, some real talent there. So, you know, you could see Kirk Cousins winning a Super Bowl, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Simon, you had a pretty exciting day the other day.
World Cup, mate.
Yeah. Where were you when Harry Kane put in that header in stoppage time? Mighty Tunisia.
The number one rated African team, you mean?
Yes.
I was in a pub called the Old Ivy in London, in Barbican in London. And it was one of those, it's weird. It's, you know, the World Cup is amazing. It's been a really good World Cup so far.
You kind of
get to the point where it's like, come on, it's got to be our turn. It's got, you know, you want to play, you want to play. You see everybody else. It's like Christmas for the other countries. They're unwrapping their presents, and yours are still sat under the tree. And then finally last night, you know, you kind of wake up yesterday morning, it was, you know, it was match day, and there's, you know, people are excited, and there's, you know, you're on the tube in London, and people are, you know, they've got England shirts on, everybody's excited, and nobody can really concentrate, and you walk around the office, and people are like, you know, I'm getting so excited, and I can't wait, and then straight to the pub, and all that tension, really busy pub. England started brilliantly, first half an hour, go the goal up, then concede the penalty. And then things start to change in the second half because, you know, we couldn't break through and people have had a bit more alcohol and they start to get a little bit more frustrated. And, you know, the kind of the what you guys would call the Monday morning quarterbacks that, you know, everybody's then got an opinion in the pub and they've had a few more drinks and they're a bit more kind of. And all of a sudden, everything that goes wrong is exacerbated a million times by the kind of the, you know, the backseat commentator, as you know, as it would be, or the backseat manager. And then all of a sudden, 91st minute of injury time, and Kane pops up with the winner, and the whole place goes absolutely, I mean, absolutely mental, jumping up and down, and drinks going everywhere, and it was quite a moment. So yeah, it's been a good World Cup generally, and an excellent start for England. So let's see if we can keep it up.
Yeah, I thought I wouldn't enjoy it because the U.S. men's national team was so bad in qualifying. Yeah. But I've enjoyed it. It's been great, great fun.
And what about you? You're the biggest anti-Costa Rica fan going. So what was that experience like?
Well, what was interesting to me is that I'm a big U.S. men's national team fan, okay? So I wanted to see them qualify. I wanted to see them play. So imagine where I am. I'm betting Germany to win it all and Mexico, U.S.'s biggest rival, beats Germany. And they actually played really, really well.
Deserved it.
That second half, you know, Germany, it was a miracle Germany didn't put in 15 goals because they were just peppering Ochoa. But and then, of course, you had Landon Donovan wear a Mexico jersey, so, you know.
Yeah, that didn't go down very well either, did it?
No, it did not. Everybody's pretty, pretty upset with that, okay? He's taking his grudge against Jurgen Klinsmann a little bit too far. They already fired the guy. You don't have to continue, you know what I mean? But anyway, Saturday, you know, I'm invited to my brother-in-law's house. He's from Costa Rica because the game was going to be at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I tend to drink a lot in the weekend, so...
So even at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be in any condition to wake up and then drive over there. So what I'll do is I'll just sleep over at their house. You know, we'll bet some horses and then watch Errol Spence defend his title. And then, I could go to bed a little bit early and wake up. So I wake up like around 7:30 to the sounds of, I don't know what the hell that was, but evidently it was the Costa Rican national team song.
The anthem, you mean?
Yeah. And we sit down to watch that game. And to be honest with you, I've seen Costa Rica play a lot because I saw them against the U.S. in qualifying. And they're a spectacular defensive team. And they have a nice player in Brian Ruiz. And Keylor Navas, you know him well.
Yeah, the Real Madrid goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty good. But, my God, they can't score. They can't score in a whorehouse with a fistful of hundreds. Okay, they are an abysmal offensive team. And that game was just, it was horrendous. It could have been the worst World Cup game so far. And I've seen pretty much all of them. So maybe the Belgium game because it was such a, you know, overmatched. But it was a pretty terrible game. And just like that, Costa Rica's pretty much on the way out.
How did you enjoy the Spain 3, Portugal 3?
That was a lot of fun.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, except for Ronaldo, you know, doing Ronaldo things, you know. I kind of like it in World Cup time when, you know, the very best players don't play all that great.
Oh, do you not?
No, I don't. I like to see the team effort come through. I don't mind seeing a team full of stars, but I like to see them play together. I don't like to see one guy dominate another.
If the Dolphins were a country, how far would they get in the World Cup?
They wouldn't qualify.
Come on. That's terrible.
Well, it depends. They've been in the group of death for the last 15 years, okay?
That's very true.
Okay?
That's very true.
And they've qualified, what, twice? So they're your chances, you know?
So we're essentially saying that they're kind of... They're like Poland.
Yes.
Invaded by New England.
pretty much.
That was a bad Hitler joke for those of you not paying attention.
Yeah, it was kind of inappropriate, yes.
Well, you know, but then, yeah, that's my MO, frankly.
By the way, we're gonna hear from a sponsor, and when we come back, we will break down some of the biggest stories. And I'm talking about these are big stories happening in the Dolphins offseason. But first, these words.
A word from one of our new sponsors. That sponsor is Miss-Inc.com. That's Miss-Inc.com. They are social media problem solvers. They do social media marketing and content writing. We are using them right now. They've been in business for 10 years, and they believe in a personal, customized approach to marketing. So they only represent businesses that are serious about taking their visibility to the next level. Social media marketing requires much more than just a blog or profiles on a website like Facebook or Twitter. It takes a smart strategy and a daily interactive focus. Miss Inc. has been leveraging social media for Miami businesses since 2008. They don't believe in cookie cutter strategies or in boxing your business in with others in your industry. Here's how you check them out. Go to miss-inc.com or call 305-537-6465.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry, episode, or could be episode 13.
14.
We're in the, 14. We're in the darkest days of the off-season. Me, Simon Clancy, and Alfredo Arteaga this week. There is no Chris Kaufman. He is off at a Tina Turner concert or something, and Bobby McFerrin, I don't know. he's no, Chris is studying hard for an exam. I don't know if it's an exam in music or kind of terrible 80s pop bands, but if it was, he'd absolutely ace that test. But anyway, we are here, and we will be joined in the second half by a very special guest host, not just a guest, but a guest host, former quarterback of the Miami Dolphins and other teams, Mr. Sage Rosenfels, will be joining us. We'll be taking over from Chris. I wonder what his taste in 80s pop bands is. Probably not as bad as Chris's. But let's get, you know, we've done World Cup. We've ripped the piss out of Chris for a few minutes. Let's actually talk about some Dolphins news, even though we're in the darkest of dark days of summer. But Mike Gesicki has signed his contract. He's the final Dolphin now to have inked a deal. Deals, contracts like this aren't, you know, they're not really what they used to be because everybody just slots in, you know, adds on 1% or whatever it is to the slot that was picked last year. But still, you know, everybody's under contract. And I think Gesicki signed his deal, and there was a picture on Instagram of him doing it in a sort of a beachfront sort of restaurant slash bar, and underneath there was a kind of very, you know, it was quite a funny message from Juwan James to say, you know, God, look at you, you know, you've been in the NFL like a couple of weeks and already you're living up to your nickname of Dolphin Superstar or whatever. And there was a number of kind of Dolphin players that, you know, Xavier Howard and whatever, he liked the comment, and then and Gesicki was like, come on dude, there was nothing I could do about it, I was like a rookie event, and you know, you had a number of players kind of chipping in, sort of going, yeah, whatever, you were kind of trying to live the high life and whatever. Just so it was good to see that kind of atmosphere, that, you know, the rookies kind of having some fun with the vets and vice versa. But it's good to get them under contract, and you know, looks like, you know, the boys will be going away and getting ready for what should be a really interesting training camp, but a number of kind of positions that are open. You can see a number of rookies potentially making waves in camp and you know, even winning starting jobs, don't you think?
Yeah, and Gesicki is, he kind of puts this offense over the top, you know? If Tunsil, like we talked about last week, if Tunsil is fine and he's not bad, then you got to think that he's the guy, Mike Gesicki being, that he's the guy that's going to put this offense over the top, make it better than any offense that Ryan Tannehill has had here. Because he hasn't had that athlete at tight end.
And he's going to do it in part because of his freaky athletic skills, isn't he? I mean, you know, this is the guy that ripped up the combine, you know, with his athletic ability. And speaking of which, did you see which former NFL receiver was sort of throwing his name out there in terms of potentially, you know, he's talked about it a little bit in terms of like getting back out on the field. He must be about 62 years old, but this particular player ran a 40. It was timed by, amongst others, Julio Jones. Julio was on the, 40-yard line with a stopwatch in his hand. Did you see who it was?
Yes, it was none other than Terrell Owens, a guy who has most recently also made news for refusing to, well, he's not refusing to be inducted, but he's refusing to attend the ceremony for the Hall of Fame this summer.
I think he'll regret that in time, actually. I think, when he's got grandchildren, he's a bit older, I wonder whether or not he'll look back on that and think, sometimes you just got to, I don't know, sometimes you just got to let bygones be bygones. And
yeah,
you know,
and you got to think about, you know, what is he really, really upset about? Is he upset that he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer? Well, no. I think what he's really upset about is, because I don't think how anybody, I don't, you know, like, who do you have to be upset that you didn't go in on the first ballot? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But what he's obviously upset about is that, come on, that second ballot was devoid of any really great skill talent, and they still passed him over on the second ballot.
So, do you think he could still play in the NFL these days? I mean, I genuinely don't know how many. Was he 42, maybe? 44.
He is 44.
I mean, he looks ridiculous in terms of, you know, and I mean that in a good way. No, that is a good ridiculous rather than a ridiculous ridiculous. Well, he can still catch passes?
Yeah, he's infamous for, he used to work out a lot with Chad Johnson, and he stopped working out with Chad Johnson because Chad Johnson liked to evidently eat a lot of bad food.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Terrell Owens has always been a guy who really, really cared about his body, ate the best food, worked out constantly. So can he play now at 44 years old? Well, yeah, why not? You know?
Good listeners, I have two other combine stories for you. The first is, I don't know if you saw Snoop Dogg's Twitter feed today, because he's doing football, as in your football, training. So he's kind of got doing the tiptoes to the ladders and making cut. He has got the spindliest legs I've ever seen in my life. It's like watching Forrest Gump when he had calipers trying to do testing at Indianapolis at the combine. It is astonishing to try and watch Snoop turn and run, catch passes. He is so uncoordinated. He's like a baby deer on ice on roller skates. It is astonishing to watch, and that's astonishing in a bad way.
Yeah,
and
but
the second,
he has an excuse though. He was probably high off of his gourd when he was
probably
doing that.
Interestingly, his son was a hugely recruited high school wide receiver.
Yes, he was.
Went to UCLA. I think his name's Cordell Broaddus.
Yes, he quit. Didn't he quit?
And really, he quit twice actually. Yeah. But now he's I saw an article with him in GQ. He's become quite a big sort of fashion entrepreneur and lives in Paris now. And very interesting life he's led. But you know, he's essentially turned his back potentially on an NFL career because he was, like you say, he's big, fast. Was a dominant high school player on the West Coast, and turned down US.
He actually played in Las Vegas.
He did, yeah, and turned down Snoop's USC for UCLA, which I think caused a few family issues. But maybe some people that's just not for them. And there you go. But the second combine story, I digress with the Snoop Dogg story. But the second combine story, and the far bigger combine story, is exciting news of the 3 yards per carry combine, which was floated on our WhatsApp group earlier on. And these were the responses I got. One, from a person who shall remain unknown, do you want to see me in the hospital? And number two, from a person who shall remain unknown, I would need 3 years to train for this. I mean, what is wrong with you two boys? This is an outrage. I mean,
well,
you were the hospital guy.
Old and washed up is what's wrong with us.
Come on, Chris is young. How old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Do you want to know? Do you want to guess?
I must be older than you, surely.
I am Terrell Owens' age.
So am I.
Oh, I'm 44.
I'm 44 too. When was your birthday?
November 19.
Oh, you're older than me then. I'm January.
Okay.
How old's Chris, do you reckon? Chris is what, 38? 36?
Well, his taste in music suggests he's 74. Okay. but I know, I'm pretty certain he's younger than both of us.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain he is as well. I'm pretty certain he is. So for him to say that it'll take him 3 years to get ready for the combine is an absolute outrage. It's an absolute omni shambles.
Yeah, those types of questions about athletics always make me sad because two years ago, I almost tore my Achilles. Did get plantar fasciitis, needed 4 months of therapy just to walk correctly, and then could barely run 6 months later. And you know how I did that?
Go on.
I was drunk on a beach playing volleyball.
I feel shamed by the pair of you. What do you think? What do you think your 40 time would be if you could run one? Do you think you could beat Rich Eisen?
No, Rich Eisen?
Really?
Well, he ran what, a 6-1?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll beat that. I'll beat that because, you know, but I need training. I need about, give me 2 weeks and I'll get in the fives.
Okay. You know?
What did Orlando Brown run? What Orlando
5.76 or something?
Really? He ran that bad? I thought it was like a 5.5.
I think so, yeah. No, I think it was slower than that.
Okay. I think I could beat that. I'll beat that. I'll beat that pretty easily. You know,
what do you think Chris would run?
If, you know, let me toot my own horn here, but I was offered a scholarship to play football in... well, Division II, but it was a scholarship. Nice. Okay. And in those days, at 187 pounds, I ran a 4.7 flat.
What position did you play?
Fullback. And then I was moved to Monster, which is strong safety, basically.
Yeah. I have got the official number on Orlando Brown's combine.
Okay.
Go on, guess. What did you say? 5.5.
5.5.
Okay, it was a 5.85.
Oh, I'll beat that. I'll beat that today. Yes.
I could beat that on a space hopper.
Yeah, I'll go outside barefoot and I'll run it on the sidewalk and I'll beat that. Yes.
Yeah. What do you think Chris would run?
Ooh, Chris Kaufman?
No, Chris Hemsworth. Of course, Chris Kaufman.
Well, he says he needs 3 years to train for that, right?
I mean, if he needs 3 years to train for it, does he think he's going to be as fast as Lavernius Coles in 3 years, or does he think he's going to be as fast as Orlando Brown in 3 years? And if so, if it's the latter, he must run about a 9 second 40 right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think Chris would beat Rich Eisen?
Man, you got to think he can. The only thing that keeps me on Rich Eisen's side is that he does it in a suit. If he wore basketball shorts and a t-shirt and proper running shoes, you don't think he beats Orlando Brown?
Oh, of course he does.
Okay. Well, that makes him a professional athlete.
I tell you what I'd like to see then. I'd like to see Chris versus Rich Eisen versus Orlando Brown.
Yes.
We need to be able to make this happen, actually. We need to be able to get Chris to record a 40, and then we can overlay the three videos of Brown versus Eisen versus Kaufman to see who wins.
Yes.
In fact, we should just get Chris to run a 40, time it, and see what he does.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd tell us the truth, though, if he didn't beat Orlando Brown. We're killing him right now. We're killing him.
Speaking of 40s and ratings and all of these things, a very important story came out, Simon.
Yes.
This shook the very foundation of the NFL and the Miami Dolphins, and that is the Madden NFL 19 ratings came out this week. And for the first time in 12 years, the Miami Dolphins do not have a player rated 90 or better. So the narrative has now reached video games. Okay?
And everybody hates us. Even John Madden hates us.
Yes. Okay? These are the ratings so far. Okay? The good news, Minka Fitzpatrick, second highest rated rookie, 78. Okay, that's the good news.
Nice.
Here's the rest of the bad news. Cameron Wake, 88. Rashad Jones, 88. Josh Sitton, 86. William Hayes, 85. They really love William Hayes because he's been an 85 for three consecutive years. Danny Amendola, 83. Kenny Stills, 83. Robert Quinn, 81. Kenyon Drake, 80. Devontae Parker, 80. Ryan Tannehill, 78.
I mean, how Devontae Parker is rated above Tannehill is absolutely beyond me. It's beyond me.
Well,
it's interesting.
Somebody that knows a lot about how they come up with these ratings say that they always severely downgrade guys coming off of injuries. And
well, except you say that, but Aaron Rodgers is 99 overall, the highest rated player in Madden 19, and he's coming off an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the three highest rated players? There are three players rated 99 overall.
Really?
Yeah, and Tom Brady isn't one of them.
99.
Yeah.
Okay, Julio Jones?
No. You've got one, Aaron Rodgers.
No idea.
Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm.
And Antonio Brown.
There you go.
Right. Enough about ratings. Although, actually, listen to this.
This week on the Five Reasons Podcast, join for a wide-ranging, fun, and funny interview with Udonis Haslam of the Miami Heat.
I remember growing up, you know, I used to stay in Lake and Sharon Apartments. Now they call it Crystal Lake. You know, this is in Kara City. I moved around a little bit, and I remember being at the park. And, you know, I got into it with this little kid, and he punched me in the mouth and ran and knocked my tooth out. And I couldn't find him. I was so pissed off I couldn't find him. He ran, he knocked my tooth out and ran. And I went home, and my tooth was knocked down. He saw me crying. He told me, if I don't go outside and find that kid and kick his ass, if I come home, I'm going to get my ass whooped by him. I looked for that kid for 3 hours, and when I found him, I kicked his ass.
Check out that interview and much more on the Five Reasons Podcast, available on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Chris Joseph, and right next to me is Slim. And we run this podcast called The Balls Cast that's right here on the Five Reasons Sports Network.
Yeah, man, you should have heard of us by now.
Sure, and we're very funny, and we're very charming, and we're very talented. So you should listen to us every week. In fact, we have all these kinds of segments like Don't Be an Asshole, where we talk about you shouldn't be an asshole. We have Beans Up Top, where we talk about sex and sexual relationships and how you can be better at that kind of thing. Yeah. We also have all kinds of cool guests. We had the president of the Dolphins. What's his name?
Tom Garfinkel, asshole.
I'm sorry. Jesus. We had David Samson on. We have good guests on this show, and we're funny, and we have parody songs, and we have skits and sketches. It's great.
And we have cool-ass fucking giveaways, man.
Yes!
We're going to have free wakeboarding session.
Yeah, some really cool stuff coming up.
Yeah. This promo is probably way too long. Nobody wants to hear it anymore. They've already fast-forwarded through it. Fuck this shit.
Well, then you deserve to win the stuff if you've listened to this long.
Seriously. Actually, if you film yourselves listening to this entire promo, we're going to give you some shit.
Some free shit. Do it. Film it and tweet it at us.
We'll suck your dicks.
No, we won't.
I'll suck your dick.
Yes, you will.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and here at Heat Beat, we talk all things Miami Heat, from the absurd...
The last time I saw Dion, I want to say it was like early March. He was hanging out in the locker room, and he looked like he put on a few pounds. So I know you guys are all excited about that.
To the serious.
Wayne Ellington in particular was just getting caught on a screen for multiple seconds, and that puts so much strain on the rest of the defense.
With guests ranging from some guy on Twitter named Kevin to ESPN hosts like George Sedano, we have a little something for everyone and anyone. Check us out every week here at the Five Reasons Podcast Network, or find us on Twitter at MIA Heatbeat for all our updates, pods, and videos.
Want to introduce you to the newest podcast on the Five Reasons Sports Network. It is a soccer podcast. It's called Pitch Invasion. My name is Chris Whittingham. I'll be hosting it throughout the World Cup, and then we'll continue after the World Cup. But right now, we're focused on the World's Tournament. It is 32 teams battling it out for one trophy. I'll be recapping the games basically after every 2 days worth of action. So every other day, we'll be putting on a podcast, recapping all the latest action, talking about all the major storylines. We'll get some guests on, and we'll have a great time talking about this World Cup. It's been really fun so far, so you're going to want to check out Pitch Invasion. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry, part 3 of this, I suppose, special episode, in that there's only myself, Simon Clancy, and Alf Artiago with us this week. With us? What? That doesn't even sound right, but you know what I mean. Because Chris is currently, I don't know, if you follow the podcast every week, he's probably at an Earth, Wind & Fire concert, or he's hanging out with Teddy Prendergrass or somebody. But we have a special guest in part 3, or at least we did. Now, let me just tell you a little story, because the first half of the program that you've just been listening to, that was recorded last night, because tonight, right now, we are going to be joined, or at least we were going to be joined, by the former Miami Dolphins quarterback from 2002 to 2005, and then 3 months in 2011, Sage Rosenfels, which would have been great. He was going to co-host for part three. Now, Sage was going to join us from the College World Series. So not only was he giving up his time, and it was pretty noisy at the College World Series, as you'd understand. So we decided to sack it off this week. But Sage is going to come on. So that's the good news. Is it the good news? That could be the bad news. The good news is that you still get Alf and I for the third part of the show, which is going to be really good, because subsequent to us hanging up our Skype lines last night, Las Vegas released the odds on head coaches being fired next season. And bizarrely, I mean, literally bizarrely, Adam Gase is the second favorite, according to Vegas, to be fired out of all 32 coaches. And he's even ahead of Marvin Lewis, who, I find the whole thing astonishing.
Is he ahead of Dave Wannstedt?
I mean, he may as well be. I mean, he'd be ahead of Cam Cameron at this stage. I mean, this is utterly astonishing. Hugh Jackson is plus 350. Adam Gase plus 750. Marvin Lewis plus 1,000. I mean, he gazes ahead of Dirk Cutter, who is the worst coach potentially in the history of the NFL. I mean, Dirk Cutter's a terrible head coach. A terrible head coach. So, I mean, mate, this has been a running theme for us in the 14 weeks since we started the podcast. But this is almost the tipping point. And then you just mentioned that Walter Football, the draft site, they've released, Walter Cherepinski has released his first mock draft of the season. And guess who he's got picking number one? The Dolphins. I mean, this is astonishing. I don't believe any of this. It's like there's a whole national narrative just to piss the three of us off, because there's no concept that the Dolphins are going to be close A to firing Gaze, and we'll get into why that won't happen. I mean, maybe we're just seeing everything. I mean, are we seeing, we've asked each other this on the podcast, are we just seeing stuff through rose-tinted glasses about this team?
No,
or it's are they really as crap?
It's that we're here. It's that we're here, yeah, and we have an informed opinion, because nobody in their right mind. Well, first of all, do you remember the first line on the over/under on wins and losses this year? Where it was at?
I can't remember now.
Okay, it was at 5. All right.
Wow. I mean,
okay, it's ballooned up to 6.5. What that tells you is that there's been so much betting pressure on the over that it's driving the number up. Right to where it probably was last year. I believe it was 7.5 last year. Not that
it
those things matter
my tiny
at all.
Mind.
It does. It really does. It's completely insane. But I think that they're getting ahead of themselves, because by next week they might have lines on the Dolphins just disbanding the franchise and moving to Alaska or something. Because it just gets worse and worse, and for no apparent reason either.
That's more likely than Gaze getting fired.
Yeah.
I mean that is. I mean, I've told this story on the podcast before, and I've told this story a million times to you. But I was told by somebody close to Stephen Ross when I wrote an article for the magazine that I write with over here, that Ross believes that he has his modern day Don Shula, and that this is a long term project. And no owner, I mean, Christ, how long did we keep Tony Sparano around for? I mean, yeah. Fist Pump Tony was around for about 20 years before we finally sacked him off. Yeah. Gaze has had his quarterback for 11 games, his franchise quarterback for 11 of 32 games, at which he is 16-16 during that period. You think that Steve Ross, the man who, you know, flew to California to try and hire Jim Harbaugh but couldn't sack Tony Sparano, is going to sack off the guy that he believes is A, is modern-day Shula, and B, he knows he's had his franchise quarterback for 11 of 32 games? That 0.0% chance that's happening. I don't understand the national disrespect. And it's something that's happened for years, actually, and I've never really paid a lot of attention to it, because it's just like, oh, whatever. I don't know. Maybe we're too close to it. And maybe if we lived in Denver or we followed the Bengals, then we'd look at the Dolphins as a comedy team. And God knows, you know, we brought a lot of that on ourselves. But none of this makes sense to me. I mean,
but have
Adam
they? Have they? What is the history here? The history here is Adam Gase. The history that they know is that he made the playoffs his first year, and his second year, his starting quarterback's leg fell off, and they still went 6-10. Now, what was Green Bay with half of an Aaron Rodgers?
Well,
weren't they also like 6-10?
So Mike McCarthy's won a Super Bowl. Green Bay Packers are a better team than the Dolphins, or at least they were last season.
Yes.
Okay. We have had Adam Gase has had Ryan Tannehill for 11 of 32 games, as I just said, and we are 16-16 during that period. Okay. Mike McCarthy, over the same period, having had Aaron Rodgers for 22 games, so that's 11 more games than Gase has had Ryan Tannehill. He has had the greatest quarterback of all time, in my opinion, for 22 of those 32 games. And the Packers, in the same period of time with which Gase is 16-16, is 17-15. And yet Adam Gase is going to get fired? I mean, come on. This is absolute horseshit. None of it makes sense.
The thing is,
as well, we're sitting here pontificating and going, and we're not really throwing down any facts per se beyond what we've just said, but because we just find it so utterly, utterly ludicrous. I just don't. And I don't think it's because we're too close to it. Listeners, I can absolutely go. And I tell you what, I will right now say right here and now, okay, text us, tweet us in your questions, okay, to either 3 yards to the three at 3 yards per carry. Okay, tweet us in your questions between now and next week. And let's say we get 500 questions. Not only will we answer as many as we can in a sort of a special mailbag next week, but of the 500, I will keep a record of every single person that tweets in over the next 7 days, okay? If Adam Gase gets fired next season, I will put everybody's Twitter handle into a hat and draw one out. Whoever the one is that I draw out, I will fly from London to your house, wherever you live in the United States of America, and I will cook you dinner. And then I will fly back home again. Okay? I will guarantee it right now that out of my own pocket, I will take a flight from London. I don't care if you live in Hackensack, New Jersey, or the far reaches of Montana. I will fly to your house. I will go to the local store and buy whatever food you like. I will cook that dinner for you. I will watch you eat it. And then I will go back to the airport, whereupon I shall eat the airport meal, get on a plane and fly back to London. That is my guarantee. That is how certain I am that Adam Gase will not be fired. And I will be out of pocket for about £700, which is about $900. And it will be worth it to prove everybody wrong, because this is not happening. Total non-story.
All right, Simon, I promised you that I was going to try to get Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers on the show, and I did put in calls to George Halas and Vince Lombardi to get their opinion on Adam Gase, but we got the next best thing. If you want to scream at a guy who's been a national media figure, here he is, Ethan Skolnick of the Five Reasons Network. Ethan?
Yes. I'm not Tom Brady. I haven't won anything in the past 17, 18 years, so that disqualifies me. I'm not married to Giselle. Trying to think of other things. I've never deflated a football. I've never spoken
allegedly.
Out in support.
Allegedly.
I've never spoken out in support of Donald Trump, clearly. So all of these things differentiate me from Tom Brady.
Well, Ethan, this podcast mm-hmm. has been a complete bitch fest. We've been sitting here and wondering what the national media has against us, because mm-hmm. today it came out that Adam Gase is the second favorite to be fired before the season is over on Bovada, Odd Shark, and mm-hmm. now Westgate. So what do you make of this national narrative that's gone on? And also Walter Football came out and has the Dolphins with the number one pick this coming season.
Yeah, it's a little ludicrous. And, you know, look, I covered the team for years and years, and I was never accused of being the most optimistic person about them. But I think they're getting a total raw deal this offseason. And I don't know if I'm quite as sort of optimistic as Simon is, but I don't understand how a team goes 6-10 without its starting quarterbacks, without its starting quarterback, brings in a guy off the street, out of the studio, who didn't care about football when he was in his prime, and bring him in to pay him $10 million, try to get him up to speed with the system. And I understand that he played for Gase before. And you still win six games with that guy and Matt Moore, and then I guess David fails at the very end. And now people are looking at this team and suddenly saying it's much worse. Why? Because they lost a very productive slot receiver and an excellent defensive tackle who did not affect the rest of the defense enough to justify his salary. I mean, is that what we're talking about here? I mean, that and Lawrence Timmons, who was not productive for them. And now you have a full year of a better running back situation, in my opinion, giving Kenyon Drake a full year after the way he played for the last six games of last season. Your wide receiving core, people can make an argument that it's not better. I don't think you can make an argument that it's demonstrably worse. I mean, it provided that Amendola stays reasonably healthy, which is an issue with him, but provided that he's out there, you add another versatile player in Albert Wilson. You're able to go to more multiple formations than you were able to go to before. And look, we talked about this with both Simon and CK when they were on our podcast, that, you know, I just felt Gase was hamstrung the first 2 years with the type of personnel he had, because he couldn't go multiple. He couldn't do two things. He cannot game plan for the opponent, because he did not have the personnel to adjust to the opponent before the game. And then he could not game plan or change the game plan inside the game to adjust to what the opponent was doing, because he just didn't have enough options. So now you've added a more versatile receiving core overall. You might not throw the ball to Landry every play like you were before on a wide receiver flat and expect him to break two tackles and pick up 7 yards. You've added a legitimate talent at tight end, which is not something that they've consistently had over the past few years. I mean, they got pretty good season out of Charles Clay, let him walk, and then Julius Thomas was cooked by the time he got to Miami. So you've already added a dynamic athlete at that position. And like I said, a full season of Drake. They added a guy at guard who ranked among the top five guards in the league last year. I don't think they've downgraded much at center because I was not big on the way that Pouncey played last year anyway, and you couldn't trust him to stay healthy. So all of that, you get your starting quarterback back, and now you add a big-time playmaker in the first round who is, to me, a sure thing in Minkah Fitzpatrick. Your corners have another year of seasoning, and we finally saw Xavien Howard turn the corner a little bit in the last four or five games of last season. And you can't be any worse at linebacker than you were last year. So, yeah, you've got a hole at defensive tackle. If you're going to have a hole anywhere on your team, I'm okay with that one. They replaced the kicker. But I think when you look at all that, you say, so how do you go from 6-10 to first pick in the draft, particularly when you're in a division where the quarterback situations in Buffalo and New York are a mess? And I'm not saying they're going to beat out the Patriots, but I do think going into the season, you can make a legitimate argument that they are probably the second best team in that division, unless Buffalo gets much better quarterback play than we expected. So all of that together, I don't know how you say they're going to get the first pick in the draft.
I've got two legitimate questions for you. The first one is that how important do you think Raekwon McMillan is to the entire team, but also to that? Because we've discussed on the podcast that he might be the most important player on that defense, which is a bold statement for a kid that's never played a down.
No, I agree. I agree. And a couple things on that. First thing, I think people who are worried, like, how is he going to contribute his first time around the team or the first time playing? First thing, he was around the team last year. So I think that helps. And I'm going to draw a basketball analogy here because, you know, we do a lot of NBA on the podcast. I think it helped Ben Simmons tremendously to be around the 76ers for a year, even though he wasn't playing. I just think that adjustment to pro lifestyle is huge. And to be able to take care of a lot of those things when you're not playing, I think can be really beneficial because I've seen a lot of guys that it's just too much for them as a rookie. So he's already gotten acclimated to Dolphins culture after 1 year. He understands what Burke and Gase are trying to run. I think that's important for him. His teammates, I think, already have begun to trust him because they saw a glimpse of it before he got hurt last year. So he doesn't have to prove anything from the very beginning. And for Dolphin fans who are concerned about it and saying, well, how's he going to perform right away? I mean, let's go back. I know it's been a couple decades here, but you know, I remember a linebacker who was drafted in the fifth round out of Texas Tech, and Jack Del Rio was supposed to be the starting linebacker, starting middle linebacker in 1996, right? I mean, that was Jimmy Johnson brought him in to lead the defense, and he cut Jack Del Rio at the end of camp to give the job to Zach Thomas because Zach was that far developed mentally and physically and was able to handle it. And also go to 1997. There was a defensive end at Akron, right, who played right away for the Miami Dolphins. There was a cornerback out of Louisville who was drafted in the second round that year, Sam Madison, who played right away. And then you go to the next year, 1998, Pat Surtain, drafted in the second round, didn't start right away because I believe they still had Terrell Buckley at the time.
They did,
playing with Madison, but they worked Surtain in, and by the end of the year, it was pretty clear he was one of their two best corners. So this is not without precedent. I think maybe Dolphin fans are a little gun shy about it because some of the drafting since that time has not been good. So they think of a Jamar Fletcher, right, like coming in and not being ready to play, or Deion Jordan not being ready to play, or some of those other guys. But this has happened in Dolphin history, and I think if you have the guy who has the intellect to do it, understands the game, has the trust of his teammates, has already acclimated to the system sort of off the field, doing the film work and that kind of thing, there's no reason he can't be really good right away. And I come back to this, guys. Their linebacker play cannot get worse, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing as the quarterback situation. Like, you're already starting with such a low bar. Like, if Raekwon McMillan can just have an occasional tackle for a loss, okay, or cover a damn tight end on occasion, like, it's already an upgrade from what they had last season. So I'm confident in him, and I'm confident in Fitzpatrick. And we have seen guys. Look at New Orleans last year. I mean, they got four legitimate studs in that draft, and that's our old friend Jeff Ireland who had something to do with that. Okay, they got four legitimate studs in that draft who contributed to a team that had a chance last year. Again, one of those young studs made the wrong play at the end of a playoff game, but they had a chance to get to the NFC Championship game and potentially a Super Bowl. So you can do that in that league with young players, and I think the Dolphins, I'm not saying they're going to win the division. I'm not even saying they're a playoff team, but I think some of the negativity with this team has gone a little too far.
Question two kind of goes back to the first thing that we talked about earlier on, and that's perception. And it's kind of, yeah, we've been a crappy team over the years. But do you think there is a kind of a general sort of malaise around national media about the Dolphins, that they're always kind of, because it feels like we're a little bit downtrodden nationally, that we're kind of an afterthought? And, you know, I'm not American, so I don't know, but maybe back, does the undefeated season, the kind of the year after year celebration went to, does that play into do people think that's a bit arrogant? And I don't know, I'm just trying to think of ideas and reasons beyond just being a very average franchise for the last 15 or so years, that there's a slight disdainfulness from members of the national media when it comes to talking about the Dolphins and rating the Dolphins and Dolphins players. Would you agree, given that you've the role that you've had in the national media?
Yeah, and I think there's a bunch of reasons for it, Simon. You know, I started covering, my first season around them was 96. I started covering them full time in 97. So that was during Jimmy's time. And yeah. I think during that period of time, the Dolphins has still had a national profile. They still had a national profile. It was coming off of Shula. The last couple of years of Shula were not great. Obviously, 95, if you remember, was the year that was supposed to be great. They had something like 22 first-round picks on that team. Mm-hmm. And that team,
that was Lewis Oliver. That was Keith Jackson and Gino. What's his name?
Steve Edmund. There were a ton of those guys. And that, if you remember, that team got off to a really fast start and then collapsed down the stretch. And then you had the end of Dan's tenure there, and then it became clear Dan was never going to win a Super Bowl, and I think some luster was off of him, particularly after the injury. But when Jimmy was there, I think they were considered an elite franchise still at that point. And then Jimmy leaves and basically quit on the team in 99. I mean, he was day trading, and he was playing with Buttercup upstairs. I mean, I covered that team. He was just not into it. They had to bring in Wannstedt to basically take over the team. I was at the press conference where they flew Dave in from Naples to basically save Jimmy. Like, it was okay, Jimmy, you can stay. You're not really going to have to coach. Dave's going to coach. You just sort of be the figurehead here. And I think the transition to Dave, I personally really liked Dave, but Dave didn't have, you know, sort of the national profile that Jimmy had. And the other problem with those teams was that was the long stretch. And Jimmy sort of started this with, you know, we're going to run the ball and Dan's going to have to do check with me and he can't audible and we're not going to throw the ball down the field. And then that continued with Dave. And so I think the problem for the Dolphins has been, not only have they been mediocre for two decades, but they've been boring. And they've been boring in terms of style of play, and they've been boring in terms of personalities. I mean, think about it. You know, because I put up a poll on Five Reasons Sports the other day, like, in the 2000s, who's the athlete that you consider to be most Miami in terms of personality, the way they carry themselves and just represent the city? And I put four names on the list, and the only two that I could come up with for the Dolphins were Jason and Zach. I mean, those, if you go back you go back 20 years, it's Jason and Zach. I mean, Sam and Pat had local profiles, but
and Ricky really, for that 1 year.
Ricky
for the 1 year, for 2002. He had it, and then obviously 2003, and then he bolted for a tent in 2004, and when he came back, it wasn't the same. But yes, Ricky did. But really, it was those two guys, and I put them on a poll with Dwayne Wade and Udonis Haslam, and those two guys got almost no votes. Both of those guys are better players than Udonis Haslam in their respective sports, right? I mean, Jason's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and we could have a long conversation about, to me, Zach's getting jobbed by not even being considered for the Hall of Fame when his numbers are better than Urlacher's. But that's a whole nother story. But that's the issue. You're going back almost 20 years. You've got two guys who've sort of been the faces of the franchise then, and those guys don't rate nationally. Jason a little bit, but not as much Zach. Those guys don't rate nationally compared to about six guys that the Heat alone have had in this town. Okay, LeBron, Dwayne, Shaq. Just go down the list. Chris Bosh, right? I mean, they've had a number of those kind of guys. And so I think it's been a combination of style of play, being sort of consistently mediocre, not having big-time personalities. And, Simon, this is also something, because from covering the Dolphins for years, they created a little of this. Yeah. They were not media friendly for a long time, and part of it with Dave, they were kind of, and then Nick came in, and the first thing he did was paint over the newspaper spots in the parking lot. So there used to be like a Sun Sentinel, a Herald, and a Palm Beach Post. The first thing Nick did was that he alienated the media from the very beginning. They tightened everything up. Then they had a year of Cameron where it loosened up a little bit, but the team was terrible. And then Parcells came in and basically doubled down on everything that Nick did. So there was a stage there for about 6 or 7 years where you had on one hand, you had the Heat, which was becoming a national, international sensation, first with Shaq in 2004, and then Dwayne, and then LeBron and Bosch and the championships and the Heatles. And at the same time, you had the Dolphins becoming very insulated, like not letting their guys talk to the media, not promoting their personalities, not giving out any information. Whereas you had LeBron James, on the other hand, talking twice a day to the media, and he's he may be the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
So I think, Simon, when you add all of that, and then you mentioned the 72 thing, unbelievable respect for what those guys accomplished.
Yeah.
But I wrote this repeatedly during that period of time. It's like every time that the Dolphins were failing again, let's bring out the guys from 72.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I mean, I was born in 73, Simon. Like, I'm 45 mm-hmm. years old. And I was not alive. I was born a month after they won the Super Bowl in 73. So I wasn't even alive. So you're expecting, particularly in this town, right? Mm-hmm. You're expecting people in their 20s and 30s to care about what the 72-73 Dolphins team. Most of those people didn't even see Marino, okay? Yeah. Like, or Marino in his prime, because if you got to go back to 84, guys, like, that's already – we're already talking – I mean, Marino's huge, huge season – you've got to go back 34 years at this point.
Yeah.
So if you're in your 30s, you have no recollection of that. And so I think it's happened locally, because what I always notice from hosting a radio show is that the Heat fans were younger and more diverse, and the Dolphin fans tended to be older and less diverse. And a lot of that is because young fans down here have not known winning or excitement with the Dolphins. And so they gravitated towards what's cool, and what's cool has been the Heat. So I do think there's an opportunity for the Dolphins. I think Ross said it inelegantly a couple years ago, because I don't think he should be comparing himself to the Heat at all in terms of recent success. But I do think there's an opportunity for the Dolphins, because I do think the Heat have sort of put themselves in a no-win. And Alfredo and I could do this on another podcast where he's going to argue with me, because I know his feelings on this. But I think the Heat have put themselves in a very difficult position with the contracts they've signed. And I think there's a chance they're going to be mediocre or just slightly above mediocre for a while. And so if the Dolphins could build excitement around a young core of guys like Drake and Grant and Fitzpatrick and Gesicki and McMillan and Howard and Tankersley, I mean, there are enough names there. And God forbid Devontae Parker. I think there are enough names there that I think they could build something. But I think it's a combination of all those factors.
What bothers me is that the recent history, in my opinion, it starts with the new coach that was hired. And all we know about Adam Gase is two seasons. And the one season that he first came in here in 2016, he got the best year out of Ryan Tannehill. The team was actually exciting because they were number three in total big plays that year behind Buffalo and Dallas, and they made the playoffs. Then he loses his quarterback and they go 6-10. I think their biggest improvement is just going to be that quarterback position. If you just take Ryan Tannehill's 2016 and you transpose it to Jay Cutler's 2017, they're going to be a plus 16. If Ryan Tannehill just repeats his 2016 this year, they're going to be plus 16 in quarterback rating differential. That is worth 4 wins on average in the NFL. Now, I'm not going to say that 6-10 automatically turns into 10-6, but 4 wins is a large number. And I don't think people are giving Ryan Tannehill the credit he deserves for being so much better than Jay Cutler, and what a large improvement just having him is going to be this year. But like I said, the narrative has taken hold, and that's the one that really bothers me. I argue all the time that Ryan Tannehill is average, that he's a top 15 quarterback. And I actually get people screaming at me on Twitter that I'm crazy. So what do you make of, I would say it's the hatred that Ryan Tannehill has maybe earned, but I don't see that he's earned it. But what do you make of that, Ethan?
Well, it's what I said earlier. I don't think people are accounting for the improvement in quarterback play. And you don't, like you said, you don't have to love Ryan Tannehill to understand that it will be better. I mean, it can't be a whole lot worse. I mean, if you just go back and look at throws that Cutler missed that could have changed games, you figure if Tannehill hits a third of those throws, it's a couple more wins. And so, I mean, look at how excited everybody got when – I can't remember the game now, but the game that Matt Moore led the comeback in the second – because they just got like a half of competent quarterback play, and everybody was like, oh, my God, look at what that looks like. But we all know that Matt Moore had trouble sustaining that and was going to have trouble sustaining that. He could do it in flashes, but if a team had a week to game plan for him, it was probably not going to go that well.
Is this the Marino effect, though, Ethan? Is it the fact that the fans – and the team have been spoiled for so long that nobody's ever going to, until somebody can live up to him, until we get the next genuine NFL superstar quarterback, the next genuine Hall of Famer to play under center for the Dolphins, that nobody's ever going to quite match up, because the specter of and the shadow of Marino looms so large over the position that no matter what the quarterback does and no matter who it is, they're never going to quite live up to what 13 did. And therefore, that's going to skew people's view of the identity of the quarterback.
But Simon, shouldn't that be over with at this point? Because the point I made, but the point I made earlier is it's been 19 years since he played for the Dolphins, right? I mean, 99. He was a shell of himself. I covered the last 3 years. I mean, not just 62-7, which everybody remembers, but go back to the playoff game in New England in 97, where the Patriots linebackers were pointing to where he was going to throw. Okay, before he threw, you know, he came back from the Achilles injury. He had moments. He did, and I give him great credit for that, because the inability to move and still to be as effective as he was incredible, particularly when he did not have a running game most of those years, and he didn't have a defense until Zach and Jason showed up at the very end. But the idea that he was – I mean, it's been a long time since Dan Marino was great, and like I said, most young fans have no recollection of him being great. They weren't even alive, so – those young fans, you would think, have lived through. I mean, I don't. Can I do the whole list off the top of my head? I mean, I was personally a Jay Feeler admirer, just as a human being. So I'm a little biased on Jay, and I also know what the veteran guys on that team thought about him. Where every time somebody tried to replace him, Jason and Zach would go into Dave's office, like when AJ Feely showed up, and Jason and Zach would go into Dave's office and say no. Okay. We trust Jay, play Jay. Okay, that happened repeatedly during Jay's time. So I have a little bit of a biased, positive view of Jay. So let's put Jay to the side. Okay, AJ Feely, Cleo Lemon, Joey Harrington, broken Dante Culpepper, John Beck, broken Trent Green, Chad Henne, disappointing. One really effective – I mean, remember how excited everybody was, and I covered this team. I was with them at the Meadowlands in 2008 when he beat Brett Favre. Think of how excited everybody was about Chad Pennington just not fucking up, if I can say that on the podcast. Okay? Like I mean, they led
He finished second in MVP voting
in
that
MVP
year.
MVP vote, and they set a record, I think, for fewest giveaways of any team ever, right? It was like something like 7 giveaways the whole season. It was some crazy number. And so they won 11 games, and they won the division basically because Matt Cassel filled in for Tom Brady that year, kind of like I'm filling in for Tom Brady on this podcast.
Don't call him Tom Brady. That will go to his head.
That's exactly right. CK's, when he listens to this, he'll certainly relate to that.
To be fair, we absolutely ruined him in the first part of the show, so this is probably makeup time.
good. Look, I didn't even get to all the names there. I mean, there were others. I mean, remember the 6 games of Ray Lucas, right? The 2-4, 6 turnovers at home against Buffalo. And I really like Ray personally, but that was a complete disaster. And I haven't even gotten to all the names. Remember Tyler Thigpen? That's another one. I mean, these are the quarterbacks that the Dolphins trotted out there all those years. I mean, they even tried Pat White. Okay, and so the idea that you – and look, I'm not a huge Tannehill backer. Right? There are things about him, particularly instincts. Most of the things with Tannehill for me are not stat-related there. And I tend to be more of a stat person than a sort of eyesight person on this stuff. But with me, it is more of an eye test thing with him. It's more like, okay, does he feel the pressure coming in the pocket? Does he slide at the right time? Does he go to the right receiver at the right time, or does he check down too early and give up on a play? Like that's the stuff with me that bugs me about him a little bit. Yeah. But he's competent. Like they have not had competence at the position for most of the past 18 years. I mean, A.J. Feely kept hurting his ass. Remember? Like, he kept – right? Okay. I was at the game. Now, was it Pittsburgh or Philadelphia? I think it was Philly. It was one of the Pennsylvania cities where John Beck got the start in the rain.
It was Philly.
100%. And he could not take the snap from center. He was scared. No. To death. And I come back to Ray Lucas. I mean, 6 turnovers against Buffalo in a home game. Like, think of all the incompetence that they've had at the position. I think it rivals, honestly, the Browns' incompetence over the past 20 years.
I've got 2 questions for you. One is kind of almost pretty, and it's for both of you, really, I suppose. One is a yes or no, pretty much a yes or no answer. Do you think that if Nick Saban had chosen the right quarterback, i.e. Drew Brees over Dante Culpepper, that the Dolphins would have won a Super Bowl in that period?
I think he would. And the reason I would say that he would is because of all of the front office talent that he was gonna attract at the time. That was gonna help him build the team to win that Super Bowl.
Here's why I say no. And I understand that the quarterback played into it big time. His wife also played into it big time. She did not like it here. That was kind of well known during that period of time. But here's the reason. I think if he'd gotten the right quarterback, he would have stayed longer. And obviously not having the quarterback in Belichick's division when he had Brady, I think Saban didn't want to embarrass himself year after year. You know, they had the 9-7 season. They were 3-7 in his first year, and then they won the last 6, and they were kind of rolling. And then the next year, if you remember, Sports Illustrated put them on the cover with Dante Culpepper saying that they were Super Bowl favorites. And then that team was just a disaster from the start, and Nick lost interest in it, and then Alabama called and he was out. But the reason I don't know if he would have won, I just don't think Nick had the temperament for it. Nick was used to controlling everything and being a god. And so when he was in East Lansing or he was in Baton Rouge, you know, college media is different from pro media. And I'm not saying that us Miami media are New York or Boston or Philadelphia. Or Chicago. We clearly are not. Okay, we are not. It's more of a I would say, if you say, is it more of a cheerleading media or a harsh media? It's more cheerleading than it is harsh. But it's harsher than college towns. I can tell you that. Okay, and because what you have in a lot of college towns is you have sort of the young, you know, college reporter who's trying to get in the business but has an allegiance to the team they're covering. So they're never going to get too hard on it. Or you have sort of the older gentleman who's been there forever, is the historian, knows everything. That person is probably not going to take him on. So when Nick came to Miami, there were a few things that he was not used to. One was that the media was going to be confrontational with him at times. He never adjusted to it. It bothered him. I can speak to a couple situations personally where I was called into his office after stories where he tried to sort of make nice when I didn't even understand why he was bothering me, because one of those times I thought he was already going to Alabama and he apologized for MFing me in a bar. And I was like, okay, maybe he's actually staying, because why does he care about me? I was the number 2 columnist at the Sentinel at the time. And I was like, well, okay, why does he care about me? But then he ended up leaving anyway. But the bigger thing, the two bigger things than the media, because sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. The two bigger things than the media were, A, he couldn't pick the players. It's not like college. It's not like college where you recruit who you want. Maybe you give them a little something on the table. Who knows? But you recruit who you want, and you have a pipeline, and you go get the exact player you want. If you're Alabama, you get the exact player you want for your system, for your culture and ability level. And so he can do that at Alabama. In Miami, he's stuck waiting for Jason Allen to drop to him, okay, and then trying to figure out what to do with Jason Allen. Like, he can't get the player he wants. And in 2005, that draft was telling to me, and I wrote about it after the draft, and Nick got upset about this column. But I wrote, if you look at the 2005 draft, he only drafted guys who played for him or he played against.
For him, yeah.
Well, Ethan, tell us all what went on in the network.
Well, you guys are clearly a huge part of it, because you guys have taken off here from the beginning. So we started with one, which was the Five Reasons flagship. It's myself and Chris Whittingham. We used to host a show in Miami together for a couple of years. And, you know, what we do on our pod is basically a combination of analysis and nostalgia. So we try to mix that up a little bit. When there's something in the news, we hit it. We hit things pretty quickly. When it's nostalgia, we give guys an hour. We just did an episode with Udonis Haslam. We're going to probably do one with Dwayne Wade before the end of the summer. I'm working on that. And so, you know, that's, we're trying to sort of cater to the Miami sports fan that way and give them a little bit of everything in a 45-minute chunk. Then obviously we added you guys, and like I said, you guys are off to a great start. I there are you know, that's obviously a crowded space. There's a lot of interest in the Dolphins. There's other, you know, there's good Dolphins podcasts, but I think you guys have something really unique because the three of you look at things differently, and you have sources in the organization, and you've covered games, and so I think that makes for a really kind of unique experience. We brought on Miami Heat Beat. It's 10 guys. It's kind of the voice of the Miami Heat fan. Gets a little crazy sometimes. They're kind of the pulse of Miami Heat Twitter. That's what they call themselves. They've been going for a while, but we brought them into the network. We thought they were a really good fit with us. We've got Ballscast, which I don't even know how to describe that, Alfredo. It's Slim, and it's Chris Joseph, and it's Adam Smoot, and it's Miami sports and culture and politics and sex and movies and music and all that kind of stuff, and it's just very Miami. I mean if you're pissed off about Miami traffic, they'll talk about it. If pissed off about Miami drivers, they'll talk about that.
Slim's Amazon Prime account.
And Slim's Amazon Prime account and you know, and Pornhub and all that. I mean, it's all there. And then we added Pitch Invasion, which I know Simon has appeared on. That's Chris Whittingham, my co-host. He's becoming pretty prominent in the soccer world. He does play-by-play for Univision and BN Sports. And so Chris is going three times a week during the World Cup. And so obviously in South Florida, we think that's a big deal. We're adding four more. You guys had O.J. McDuffie and Seth Levitt on. They're spearheading the Fish Tank. I can tell you 90 minutes with Channing Crowder, an hour with Zach Thomas, and an hour with Rhonda Gadsden. And so they're going to be releasing those episodes. They're trying to get Pat and Sam to come in together. But that's story time. It's not a barbershop concept, because if we say that, LeBron will sue us. But it's that kind of thing. We're gonna have a wrestling pod with Mr. Bill and with Josh Appel, because those pods are very popular because the mainstream media doesn't cover it. And we've got two more coming: a fantasy football one, which we announced today with David Ganos and Garion Thorne, and a University of Miami football pod. Haven't announced the person who's running it yet, but it's somebody who's connected with the program. So we've got all of those. We've got a couple more. So our whole idea, guys, is we want to provide content to listeners on their schedule when they want to download it. It's not just sort of, you know, potluck when you turn on the radio or read a newspaper. Like, this is exactly what you want, when you want it, the teams that Miami sports fans care about, the sports that they care about. And so we think it's pretty unique. And so check us out at Five Reason Sports. That's the number five Reason Sports. And obviously check these guys out at 3 yards per carry.
All right, guys. Well, we do encourage you to listen to all of the podcasts on the Five Reason Sports Network. Talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 yards per carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.